For January the 24th, 2020, we talk about Until Dawn, Rush of Blood, Where the Water Tastes Like Wine, and we ask you what your dream arcade cabinet would be. Welcome to Level 313. My name is Cole Ross.
My name's David Meismeth.
And I'm Chella Prendez.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Jala.
Yahoo! Yeah. How have you been, guys?
Been doing okay. First time having you on in the new year.
I know. It's been a minute. I miss Toadie and, like, everything. I'm just, like, rolling up, like, sup, dude?
Well, we're happy to have you back on. What's going on?
Well, the couple of big things. It's been so long. I was in Duckstream. Yay mm-hmm. for all the people who got to see Duckstream. Yeah. So I'll talk a little bit about what I played on that during the grind, because as long as it's been, that's one of the things I played. Mm-hmm. Also, I signed up for something interesting that is happening in September. Mm-hmm. It is a cosplay bodybuilding contest that's going on at Dragon Con in September. It's called the Muscle Nerd Showdown. And so I talked three people into doing it with me.
Anybody from the community?
It's people, there's two people who listen to the podcast, Dave and Dominique. And then there's also another girl that I know, whose name is Giselle, who is just kind of nerd adjacent, but not like part of the listenership. So, and so anyway, we're going to be all doing this, cosplay bodybuilding contest, which is basically exactly how it sounds. You go in a costume, you are on stage presenting the character as you would in a regular cosplay competition, but you are also working in bodybuilding poses, and you are graded on your presentation of the character, your costuming, and of course your physique and your posing and all of your presentation for the bodybuilding part of it as well. And they have different levels. There's like the expert category for people who know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. There's the novice category for all of us who have never done it before. I have never done either one of those two things, so I am a novice. There's also just one that is a transformation category that is basically a showcase panel that is non-competitive, that is just if you want to participate and do this for your own health and wellness, you can do that and become part of the transformation showcase and be showcased and you know, featured that way during the competition. It's got basically its own miniature little convention that goes on at the same time as Dragon Con. Mm-hmm. And they're going to apparently also have like places you can get CEUs and stuff if you're a personal trainer such as me, which is really neat. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it's going on when Dragon Con's going on. And I've never been to Dragon Con, so I will also be going to that.
Dragon Con is a lot of fun.
Five hotels, 100,000 people. Yeah. And if anybody's interested on what Muscle Nerd Showdown is, questofthemusclenerd.com, there is actually a video that is about like a video kind of documentary thing about the first Muscle Nerd Showdown, which was like in 2017, I think. So it's been going on for a little bit. So. Yeah.
So
also, that 100,000 should have mm-hmm. quotes around it, because it's if we say there's more than 100,000, the fire marshal will come after us.
Okay.
Huh. I was about to ask. It's at the biggest venue in Atlanta. No, it's at five of the biggest in Atlanta.
Yeah, and they shut down the streets to do like a parade and all of that, mm-hmm. costumes and stuff. So I mean, it's a big deal. And so, that's a thing. And so I'm going to be doing that. And you know, that's a cool thing. I also went to PAX South, which is what I'll be talking about during my grind / end boss / whatever.
Yeah.
So I look forward to telling you guys more about PAX South here in a little bit. But that's essentially the bulk, the main things that I've got highlights, you know.
I bet you immediately regretted saying bulk. Was that because you were talking about bodybuilding stuff?
Because I'm on bulk. I am on bulk, and everybody else in the world, when I am, everybody else likes to bulk because you get to eat a lot of food. Right. I hate it with passion because I don't like feeling full and slow and sluggish, and I do not like to intentionally gain weight. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just against, like, because I lost weight a long time ago and I had body dysmorphia. I do not like to consciously be gaining weight. That's just very upsetting to me. Like, it's better this time than it was the last time I bulked. Mm-hmm. And I think over time it'll like stop being an issue, but like, it's still, even though I am bulking slower, I still have a month to go and I am so complaining about it. I can't stand this anymore. My pants don't fit right. This is upsetting. Yeah. So I will be so much happier when I'm on cut. But anyway.
Yeah.
Well, so that's me.
Who are you going to dress as for the
This is kind of a complicated question that is not video game related, and only like two people will understand what I'm saying, so I can tell you, but you're not going to understand. I'll have to give like visuals for you as well. So there is an anime series that I've mentioned several times called Slayers, and it's like my favorite anime series of all time. And there is a character, the main character's name is Lena, and Lena is is short, redhead, and she's like quote unquote supposed to be flat chested. Mm-hmm. And that's the big joke of the series. Well, I am not blessed with large boobs, and therefore that was the first thing I thought about.
Okay.
However, there is also a character whose name is Naga. And Naga is like the foil for Lena, and she is gigantically breasted.
Okay.
And wears basically a little battle bikini. And so what I thought about doing was to go as Lena, but Lena wearing Naga's outfit, which is actually part of some of the official artwork for some of the OAVs. And so because there's a scene in Slayers where Lena is like at a hot springs with a bunch of other females, and there's one that is younger than her who is has a larger chest than Lena does, and Lena is just like looking down at it like, oh my god, how is this, she's younger than me, like, oh my god, why is this a thing? And so there's a scene where she goes into the little hotel room and she's like in her robe or something, but then she leans into the mirror and she's like, when are they gonna grow, you know, that kind of thing. And then she gets caught and then she gets all embarrassed. So what I was thinking for my presentation is to go on the stage and pretend as if the audience is my mirror, and I am basically, you know, like Lena is trying on Naga's outfit when Naga doesn't know that she's doing it, and like, you know, is looking at herself in the mirror and posing and stuff, and just like imagining and like having Lena's outfit stuffed into Naga's bra.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, to make it look like she's got big chest. So that way it's like Lena trying to imagine what it would be like to have a chest that big, you know, and all of this stuff. So like, I have a whole thing worked out on what I want to do with this, but Lena is covered up head to toe. So it's like, that doesn't work out for a bodybuilding competition when you have to show your muscles.
Right.
So that is the initial idea behind wearing the Naga's outfit, but still being the Lena character, because Lena's build is more like my build, but Naga's outfit is more amenable to bodybuilding thing. So.
Okay.
So like I said, it's extremely complicated. And like, the people who know are probably screaming and going, oh my god, that's so cool. Mm-hmm. And nobody else knows what the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So, you know, do some homework, guys.
Cool. I will go and learn about every anime, I suppose.
Yeah, there you go. Go learn about anime, especially really old ones. Yeah. So, all right.
Oh, David, what's up with you?
Not really too much, honestly.
Yeah.
Well, I'm pretty much, I'm in the time of the year where I just stay inside and hide from the cold.
Yeah, no, it's bad.
Yep.
Yeah. Huh, what you drinking?
Ironically enough, with that, a vanilla milkshake.
I gotcha. Wait a minute. I gotcha. Okay. Yeah. No, you just you went to grab a beverage before we started. I was curious what you had. I just have water. That's all I've got. I might pour myself some wine later, but.
Oh, I went to a winery over the weekend. Oh, yeah? And I went to Messina Hof, but which is one of my favorite wineries. But they have a location in Fredericksburg, which is north of San Antonio by like an hour and 20 minutes or so. Mm-hmm. So I went up there and tried some wines and somehow got suckered into being part of the wine club. So now I've got wine going to be mailed to me. Surprise, surprise. So I will be drinking more wine in the future.
Cool. Yeah. No, I don't have anything fancy. This is just. It's like a Boda box thing.
Mm-hmm. So all I'm hearing is that we need to have Return of Drunken Dungeons.
Yes, Drunken Dungeons is, and that needs to be streamed if that becomes a thing.
Yeah.
we'll work something out. We'll have to find a time and make that a thing.
Yeah, I don't have too much going on here. There's a thing that I like, it doesn't fit into like the grind because it's not really a game. But so I got the Oculus Quest and I've been having a lot of fun playing around with that. And I was playing around in Steam VR and like one of the, it shows you a list, in your little room that you're in. It shows you a list of like, here are the most popular games and here are the multiplayer games that have the most people. And then like top free experiences or something. So I looked at that and they had Google Earth VR in there.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have expected that to be a good use for VR, but like zooming around the world like you are. I don't even know. Like so Superman is the wrong thing, but like
Santa?
Yeah, it's like Santa. There we go. No, but like, it's that same thing that like everybody's parents did. I did the same thing everybody's parents do when they see Google Earth, which is, oh, I'm going to go to like, is my childhood home on there? But like you've got the pointer controller and you're like pointing at an area on the Earth and you are clicking and dragging to bring it closer to you and you're zooming in and like all of the houses and buildings and stuff. I don't know if they have depth information or what, but like when you get close enough, they turn into like little chunky, surreal 3D models of the thing. And you can enter a mode that is like, keep me at human scale no matter what. So like you are a tiny person suspended over nothing. Over the entire world. It's bizarre, but it's a really good use of VR. Like I was flying around the streets of New York, like looking at the neighborhood in Brooklyn where I lived. I was like flying around the University of Cincinnati campus. Guys, I think I'm a VR true believer now.
Do they have Street View? Awesome.
Yes. Yeah. And when you're in Street View, it's like, yeah, full 360. You look around and obviously it's not moving and it's flat. But like you just point down the road to where you want to go and you can just broop, zip over. And could see the shitty house where I went, where I lived in college. And like I looked in the backyard and like it's like, oh, yeah, there's just like bags of trash out here. Yep, that's this neighborhood. Hi, everybody. Yeah, it's weird. It just a very strange experience. So yeah, VR,
awesome.
Yeah. Well, that's close to being the grind. Why don't we just go in and do the grind?
Do it
with the regular kind of show. We've got the grind, the multiplayer. Then we're gonna round out with the end boss. Somewhere in there, we're gonna get Jala's dispatch from PAX South.
Eel.
Somewhere there, but why don't we get started with
the grind?
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so, Jala. Because you have been away the longest, I will throw to you first.
Okay, so I will keep it real brief because I know I'm going to be talking PAX South for a while. Mm-hmm. I have returned to do some co-op, a little bit of co-op, not a whole lot of co-op, but a little bit. On Switch, I played Mario 2 and 3 with Dave. And guys, I can't play Mario 2 or 3 on Switch with the Switch controllers at all. Like, oh my God, I can't play Mario, guys, on that. And I think it's the controller. I need to get one of those. Actually, looks like the old NES controllers for those NES games. This is miserable and terrible.
I've got I've got a pair of those coming to me. I got it at like the last day that they were selling them for half off.
Oh man. Yeah. So yeah, I've got to put those on like a wish list and like hawk, you know, stare at the price and wait. And if some listener happens to know when they go on sale and you do not hear me talk about having them, please tell me and I will most definitely go and pick up a pair because I cannot, this is stupid. I mean, like, wow.
No, right, so like, sucks playing those games with an analog stick.
I'm glad that it's not just me because boy, like it's not just me because Dave was also dying. We're like, we're on world 1-1. How is this difficult? Like, what
is
happening?
It's like, it's real slippery. Yeah,
it is. It is super slippery. And I'm just like, but wait, no, this is, oh, so, okay. But I see more of that kind of thing going on in the future, doing some Switch co-op type stuff. So I also played a little bit of Roller Derby Remix. You remember Robot Roller Derby Disco Dodgeball that I was playing a while back, that arena shooter with like the cool EDM, and it was basically like Rosie the Robot from the Jetsons goes to a club and shoots people with, you know, with dodgeballs. That's essentially what this game is. I played a little bit of that on my Switch, and that was fun. I also played some Sniper Elite 4. I just did like the first level again, so that was cool. And then Dave and I finished all of the original Trine co-op because, you know, they had made it co-op a long time ago, but I had never actually finished the entirety of the first game. So, you know, we just sat down and played it all in one sitting.
Yeah.
So that was cool. So yeah, I've done, it sounds like, man, you've just been playing games nonstop. It's been a month since I've been on the show. Yeah. So, you know, understand I've had some time for all this stuff to happen. Okay. So there's that. And I finished Cosmic Star Heroine, but I don't know that I have a lot to say about it because I kind of covered the gist of it the last time I was on, and I don't know that anything has changed, you know, in the rest of the game that I you know, had played. And also that was like the first thing that I finished in this whole month I've been away, so I have slept a lot since then. So I don't know that anything else to say other than I did it. Yeah, it was many sleeps ago, and I don't know. I did the thing. So that was completed. Back in the day, you know, a month ago, if you go back to my Twitter from a month past, you will see all of the ending thoughts, whichever ones I had in my Twitter feed. But that's all I can say on that. Yeah. The last thing about. Huh?
Oh, I was just going to ask about Cosmic Star Heroine. Did the story still continue to do like nothing for you?
Indeed. It was just kind of like there. It was just, you know, playing the game. And then too, even the gameplay, like I had said, well, the gameplay, you know, was the part that I, you know, was enjoying about it. Mm-hmm. Well, as it got towards the end, it just kind of felt like there were a lot more fights, but they didn't get any more exciting. There were just more of them. And I'm just like, bummer. And then I started getting sick of the fighting too. So I was just kind of like, all right, I would like to be done with the game now. You know, I know it's not that long. I need to finish this because I would like to talk about it on the show, but then I would like to see the ending, the resolution of it, and kind of like move forward, see if it has any more tricks for me or anything. And, you know, like the end boss was not particularly hard or particularly easy. It was just kind of like there, just the JRPG end boss. I didn't have much to comment about that. And there weren't any new technical things after a certain point either to kind of freshen it up.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was just kind of like, okay, sci-fi JRPG ending. Gotcha. Yeah.
Cool.
You know, cool. So, I mean, like there are a lot of people who really dig it and that's great. If you liked what you heard the last time I was talking about it and it sounds like your thing, it stays consistent. It's just like, for me, I just either need more verbs or, you know, something else going on, like some story or character beats that excite me. And I just, there wasn't any of that really on the last half of it. So,
yeah.
You know, I just finished it out.
Okay.
The last thing that I was playing was Where the Water Tastes Like Wine, and that is what I was playing on Duckstream. Yeah. So, for those who know, I dressed as Jalakuma, and I had a little bit of, like, a couple of hour block when Cole was trying to get some sleep.
Thank you.
Where I was playing Where the Water Tastes Like Wine, which is a narrative game where you are a skeleton with a bindle going across America talking to people, and gather stories from different incidents that happen and different people that you encounter throughout the game. And then there are kind of like key players, certain characters that you can come across at campfires that you tell these stories to, because you just kind of chit chat back and forth. And you tell them different stories that they ask for. Like they say, tell me something funny, you know, mm-hmm. and then you have to go through all the stories that you've, you know, come across in your travels and tell them a story. And if it pleases them, if it's the kind of story that this particular character, you know, enjoys, then they will tell you in return a little bit about their story. And then you can add that, you know, to all the information that you have. There's some interesting things about it. Like every time you go through and hear a new story, sometimes you'll hear stories that you've heard before. Like, you know, at one point I came across a spooky hotel where there were these twin toddlers that were just staring at me, super The Shining like, but they were ghosts. And okay, well, that's kind of creepy. But then you go a little bit further in the game and you're, you know, wandering somewhere else, and then somebody is telling the story about those ghosts, but they added a new twist to it.
Okay.
And then you add that to your repertoire, and, you know, the story grows in you hearing different renditions of it as you go, you know, throughout the U.S. and just hear it, you know, by word of mouth. Mm-hmm. And then when you are at the campfires, you can't tell the same story more than once to the same character. So once you've used a story, you like never can use it with that character again because they've already heard it. So, you know, like there's some interesting kind of tactical stuff to it. And I really like the art. I really like the music. It was a lot of fun to play. There were some people who picked up a copy of the game either for themselves or for, you know, like their wife or something like that, just from the little bit that they saw when I was playing the game. And yeah. Another fun thing that I did that's not related to the game itself is that I was, as a reward, when people donated over, like, I think it was $15 or something, I had a bunch of little anime face masks, and then I also had a Monokuma face mask, and I would switch out my face, you know, at the request of, you know, whoever donated, they can tell me which face to put on.
Okay.
And then I would switch my face.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of fun. There were, thanks to everybody who was there when I was streaming it, and all of that stuff. And I don't know, I was thinking, man, it might be fun to continue doing this on stream, but because of the time that I usually stream, it's just such a weird time because it's usually like on Sunday afternoon or something.
Yeah,
it's such a weird time. There's not very many people who are available to mm-hmm. just hang out and watch at that time. So yeah. There are people who catch the VODs, but you know, I don't know if I'm going to, I don't know if I'm going to finish, you know, streaming that on there or not. Mm-hmm. But if anybody listening goes and sees the VOD and is interested in seeing me go through and play the rest of it, I will consider doing so in the future. So questions about Where the Water Tastes Like Wine at all? I mean, like, I don't know if I did a proper job explaining what it is.
Go ahead, David.
So why are you a skeleton in this, and why do people think that seems like a good person to talk to?
I don't know. There's no explanation I can find for you being a skeleton with a bindle. So I don't know.
Yeah, no. See, there's something about this that like I got angry with at the start, and I didn't really hear anything else you said. So like, he's a skeleton with a bindle, but all that's doing is advancing the misconception that bindles like are used for carrying things. Like, I remember being a little kid and thinking, I'm going to run away from home, and like, okay, I've got to pack up everything I'm going to need. So like maybe a fruit roll up and some action figures and stuff. A handkerchief mm-hmm. on the end of a stick fills up really quick. And yes, it does. I got so frustrated with it that I didn't run away. So
you're doing it wrong, Cole.
Okay.
You're just doing it wrong.
I was going to ask, like, do you have a
like
bindle pro tips, Jala?
Get a bigger handkerchief.
So I actually, when I was in San Francisco, I saw someone carrying a bindle.
Okay.
So it is in fact a thing that people do, whether it's a good idea or not.
No, I don't really have any questions, questions about it. Like, I guess, they had so many people write scenarios for this, different interactive fiction authors and things like that. Like, do you find like it, so is there a lack of cohesion? Is it cohesive, or is that lack of cohesion, like, does it work to the game's benefit?
Well, because the whole idea of this is that you're wandering across the U.S. and you're learning all these stories and then retelling those stories and things, the different narratives that are told are just kind of like part and parcel of what you're doing. You're going around looking for different stories that are being told by different people. That's like the point. So, the fact that they have a bunch of scenario writers is fine. It doesn't need to all be written by one person because, the whole concept. The fact that you need to have a bunch of different voices and a bunch of different approaches to it. And you can definitely tell that there's different styles of writing for different scenarios and all of that. But that, again, that's not something that detracts in any way from what you're doing in the game. Yeah. It just kind of adds to the spirit of adventure to it.
Cool. That's what I figured, but I was curious of that, if how that came across.
Yeah, there's a game I'll be talking about when I'm talking about PAX South that kind of has a similar sort of thing going with for it. Mm-hmm. The whole different scenarios with different writers and all of that mess.
Yeah.
But I will discuss that whenever it is that I'm talking about PAX South. Okay. This is the end of my games, however. So these are the games that I played.
Okay, cool. I'll go to you, David. How about you?
Honestly, not a ton to talk about, at least that's new. Mm-hmm. I've been continuing on with Deep Rock Galactic, and I believe when I spoke last time, I had just prestiged, or in the terminology of the game, promoted my Gunner class character.
Okay.
And that unlocks the end game, which is some kind of randomly dropped loot and these things called deep dives, where basically there are a series of very difficult missions that you do, three missions back to back, and you keep all of your ammo at the end of one mission. Ammo and health at the end of one mission is what you start with on the second one.
Okay.
It also changes up the objective some. So traditionally, you have one primary objective, which is generally either like mining, killing strong enemies, or gathering alien eggs. Mm-hmm. And one secondary objective, which is always basically gathering some resource that's scattered across the map. In deep dive mode, though, any of the objectives can be mixed up, so you can in effect have like two primary objectives.
Okay.
So it really changes up the gameplay a good deal and is actually a lot of fun.
Cool.
The other thing I experienced for the first time is the maps have various modifiers and mutators on them that change the gameplay. I think Ben spoke last week about the low oxygen mode, where you basically have to periodically return to your drop-off location in order to not suffocate. But there's a mode I had actually never played before called Haunted Cavern. And basically one of the enemies in the game is called like a volatile detonator or something. It's this giant bug covered in kind of these glowing, explodey bits.
Mm-hmm.
And when it gets near you, it can basically slam it into the ground, create a very high damage, high AoE explosion.
Okay.
And in the Haunted Cavern mode, there's actually this transparent ghost of one of these bugs.
All right.
That you can't kill. So you basically
but can it still hurt you?
Yes.
Okay.
So you have to play the entire match just like kiting it around as you complete the objectives.
Okay.
So which is a lot of fun, in particular if you're playing the scout class, because you have a grappling hook, so you can do things like purposely bait it towards you away from your allies, and then, you know, grappling hook to the other side of, you know, the cavern.
Okay.
Similarly, I don't know if this is always the way for these game modes, but at least the one we were in mm-hmm. was very large. And the way that light works in this game, generally speaking, is your character tosses out glow sticks.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And they only last for a few seconds, and they regenerate over time, but you can only throw out so many at a given time.
Mm-hmm.
So with it being such a large cavern, and by the nature of the being chased by ghosts, having to move around a lot, most of the time, you know, whereas normally the game very much emphasizes a slow, methodical pace, you know, constantly you know, creating light so you can watch your back from enemies.
Yeah.
This ended up being just like running through the darkness the entire time. So yeah, so basically it ended up being a lot of fun. I could see how, you know, it's something that could be really annoying, you know, in the wrong situations, that sort of thing. And also I was playing probably the ideal class for it.
Right.
But, you know, still seems like a lot of fun. So other than that, I'm just working on unlocking some new weapons. I unlocked a sniper rifle and dual pistols for the scout.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a flak cannon for my gunner, which mm-hmm. is kind of fun. Turns him into a big-time AoE-focused character.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, you can, you know, it's a little difficult to play because it's, you know, very slow, very inaccurate, and has a spin-up time. But you can just lay down a lot of fire. So
is the flat cannon, is it like a rocket launcher, or like where the projectile moves slowly, or is it like faster, like hit scan kind of thing?
I'm fairly certain it's not hit scan. It's okay. Definitely not animated as hit scan. Yeah, it's definitely, now that I think of it, it's definitely not hit scan, because one of the end game items you can get increases the projectile speed.
Okay.
So yeah, so it's not hit scan, although it's also not particularly slow.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I would compare it to more of like a being like a tank cannon type of weapon, as opposed to like your traditional, you know, Quake style rocket launcher.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so, you know, it ends up being very much you can build your character to fit specific roles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things I like with the scout is they get can have a sawed off shotgun. So if you want to, you can play them as basically most of the enemies are insects, and their abdomen is usually a weak point.
Okay.
So playing as the scout, you can try to basically zip line right behind an enemy and unload your shotgun into their butt.
Okay.
Which does a lot of damage, but is also very dangerous.
It probably would be, since you're getting as close as possible to an enemy, you know, quickly. Yeah.
Exactly. Especially since a number of them, you know, either can spew acid or are, you know, radioactive or, you know, various things like that.
Yeah.
So the only other thing, which is something I'm sure has been in the game the whole time, but I just didn't notice, is I've really been noticing the different biomes, some of the effects they have. Probably my favorite is when you're in the area that's kind of the lava, you know, deep underground type of area. Mm-hmm. They'll periodically be earthquakes, and just fissures will all of a sudden open into the ground that are basically have lava at the bottom.
Okay.
And so that can very much you know, change at a moment's notice the structure of the area you're going to.
Okay. Are you playing this with randos, or are you playing this with people that you know?
Combination. I'm playing it with Ben and Dennis a lot, and it's very much a game that benefits from being with other people, particularly because I think we described all of the classes have some utility ability, and both the game set up around you know, you having access to all of those. And in particular, if you're playing as, for example, the gunner, they don't have a lot of mobility on their own. So it can be very frustrating if you're playing by yourself or playing with random people.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, similarly, there's a lot of characters that, you know, if you are playing them correctly, can kind of just break the game in various ways.
Right.
And I say that, I guess, it's break the game in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Yeah, it's that's pretty much what I've been playing. Any cool questions about that?
Nothing further?
Mm-mm.
No. Mine are going to be pretty quick, because it's like one short thing and then a thing I've streamed. I'll do the streaming one first. So because my streams, specifically like toward the end of last year, were really narrative heavy, hitting things like Lorelei and Detention, and even like Echo Knight to a certain degree, I wanted to play something that was pretty mechanical. And also I figured I'd been on too much of a run with good games. So I decided to fire up a real, I mean, so the thing is, it's also a very good game. Alone in the Dark Inferno. Is the PS3 version of the 2008 Alone in the Dark game. And the thing that is really weird about it has every system in it. You want physics? It's got physics. Everything's physics. In fact, there's no attack button. What you do is you hold out a weapon and you flail it around, and that's when it does damage to the enemies. Guess what? The enemies, when you knock them down, they're not dead. No, they're going to get back up. You have to go pick up something wooden, light it on fire, and then run back and hope that you can flail that on fire item onto the enemy. Or maybe you drop it onto the enemy to light them on fire so they stay down. Or maybe you drag the enemy over to the fire and then set yourself on fire while you try to set them on fire. Guess what? Everybody's got to go. Does it have a driving system? You betcha. You're driving around Central Park. You're in a car.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like an Uncharted style climbing system in it. So you press a button and you can go first person, third person. It doesn't really matter. Doesn't depend. Heal yourself, you have to enter a special mode where you're aiming a can of Resident Evil-esque healing spray at yourself, at your various wounds. Like a lot of games from this era, it prides itself on having no interface visible to you, but you have an inner inventory system. Look this up, like look up a like a video of this or a picture, or watch the stream. So when you want to look at your get into your inventory, your character, you go into first person mode. Your character opens up his jacket like he's a flasher, or like he's a the merchant from Resident Evil 4. Like what are you buying? And like he's got all these pockets.
That guy's the true hero.
He's like a fucking counterfeit Rolex dealer at Battery
That's
Park.
Awesome.
Guess That's what? Awesome. It's got crafting. I'm going to literally describe a puzzle. Okay. So there is like a growing like egg sack that is blocking some lasers that is keeping a door closed. This egg sack is spawning like little parasitic spider things. that normally run at you, but it's running up to like a puddle of blood and licking at it, and occasionally it runs back to its mommy, back to its egg sac. So what you have to do is Jesus, you have to grab a plastic explosive bottle. Okay, not the glass one, because the knife that you need to have will not pierce the glass one. All right. You have to do this, or pick up the plastic one. You have to wrap it in double-sided sticky tape in the crafting system. Okay, then you have to put the bottle in one hand, the knife in the other. Use both of them at the same time. Your guy will puncture the plastic bottle. You will throw it on the spider. Okay. And it will run back to the egg sac, back to mommy egg sac. And it will leave a trail of gasoline. And then you have to pull out your lighter and then light the trail of gasoline to set the egg on fire so you can proceed. It's fucking unreal.
I wish I were around to see this.
I wish you were around to see it too, Jala. What were you saying, David?
So is there any reason you can't simply put the fuel directly on the egg sac?
Yes. And so the egg sac is, you're separated from it by a grate. So you're separated from it by the door that the egg sac is keeping closed by blocking the lasers. Like, I have heard music. You hear music and you think, okay, you can tell. Yeah, this cocaine made this music, right? This is the first game I've played where cocaine made this game, and I'm not normally like, oh, it's X on steroids and in hell. Like, it is just a collision of so many different things, and like, so this is Alone in the Dark. It's like a remake kind of like slash reboot. It's taking elements from the 2005 Alone in the Dark movie, but you're playing as Edward Carnby. And you don't just share the name with the original hero of the, you know, of the trilogy. You're actually the same guy who just woke up and you're going after the devil now.
Okay.
I mean, if you're going to go after someone.
It's fine. Well, he's coming after you, too. You've got the Philosopher's Stone. And all this is to say that, like, yeah, no, this is a very good game.
So is this the one with great blood packs?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you can get blood packs and things like that. Like, streaming this has been really fun. Like, people have been pulling pulling clips of just the glitches and stuff where, like, a car will just start floating across the world for no reason. You know, the camera angle makes it look like I'm going to drop 3 feet and then I drop down an elevator shaft. Yeah, it's the only thing that makes this very, very good game, I can't stress that enough, the only thing that makes this very, very good game possible to stream is the fact that it has a really generous checkpointing system. So whenever the game decides to gift you, let's say, with an unexpected surplus of your character's blood on the outside, you're only set back like 2 minutes. It's really fun, and I'm looking forward to finishing it this weekend because I know from watching videos that the ending cutscenes get off the rails.
Oh, I'm definitely going to have to make sure that I'm around this coming weekend to see this and to be hanging out in the chat for this.
It's it is honestly some of the most fun that I've had. like playing a game on stream, because it is just extremely a high quality video game.
Sounds bonkers. I like it.
Yeah.
So I am curious, when do you have the call to use like the climbing mechanics in New York City?
You'll find yourself like, so the game begins like you're at the top, you know, at the top of a hotel building, and like there are these kind of demonic fissures that are chasing you around, and the building is like coming apart, so you will end up needing to, you know, like climb down the side of a the side of a building on a cable, or you know, shimmy across some ledges, and you know, Central Park is isolated by the earthquakes and stuff relatively quickly in the story, and so like this kicks up enough geometry where there's like climbables around. Does that make sense?
Yeah I feel like this is another example of, you know, misunderstanding that the NYPD is not a police force. It's a very small military.
I mean, yeah, no.
The monsters would be dead within seconds, but.
Oh, Jesus. Any other questions about Alone in the Dark Inferno?
No, but I do need to see it, so I will be there this weekend. But not that that's surprising, you know. That's my usual.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. The other thing I've been playing that is another extremely good video game. I don't know if extremely good, really enjoyable, is Until Dawn, Rush of Blood.
Okay.
So this is a PlayStation VR game, and it's relatively brief. Picture this as like a... like House of the Dead, or did either of you play Carnival?
Oh, yes.
In the arcades?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have a very, very soft spot in my heart for Carnival.
Carnival is really fun. I love the, you know, if you find a cabinet that has the shotguns where you reload by racking it, incredibly good. Yep. This has a real similar kind of aesthetic to it. It has very little to do with the actual events of the game Until Dawn. Which I streamed years and years ago at this point. That is the, a bunch of teenagers. It's like a slasher movie kind of thing, set in Canada. Like they're trapped at a lodge and people are going in. Anyway. it has very little to do with that. Like you're playing as like one of the characters from that game in his like, you know, psychosis or what have you, and so this is a game where you're like sitting in what amounts to like a roller coaster car going through a carnival, like a carnival ride. So you're on a track, like there's no actual movement that you do, and you're using the PlayStation Move controllers as like these incredibly satisfying feeling guns. Nice. And you're moving through these areas, you know, shooting at enemies as they come at you, and like shooting objects in the environment to maintain a combo to get your score up, which is pretty cool. It's almost like a little bit of a, like a rhythm game kind of thing. Has a lot of like kind of gimmicky stuff for being in VR. You know, it does a lot of, you know, characters kind of getting right up in your face and screaming. There's some stuff that actually like I'm surprised how much it worked for me, like where it will like dangle you over what seems to be like an infinite void, or like you're very, very high up, and like it, you know, I understand, like this makes me sound like, oh, a train was coming at the movie camera, so I ran out of the theater because I thought it would crash into us, but like no, like it makes your right. You know, it made my stomach do like a little somersault, right? Mm-hmm. But it's just a really fun, satisfying little shooter. And I was really surprised at like the amount of accuracy that I was able to get. Again, using these two guns and like doing like cross shots and things like that, you know, refer to last episode's title of Look Dumb, Feel Cool. Like, it is a real, you know, look dumb, feel cool kind of thing. You know, it is very much like a classic arcade shooter, all the way down to, like, there are special objects in the environment, like, you know, weapon crates, where you'll shoot this, and then, like, oh, the gun that you shot that with turns into a shotgun, or a revolver, you know, submachine gun, something like that. And, like, you know, you need to make sure that you're equipped for the right thing. For the right scenario, because they're good for different things. It's relatively short. It's like 2-3 hours. I got it for free in PlayStation Plus. But some of the huge boss battles that you do are genuinely impressive. Again, because these things are, you know, literally looming right over you in the space, you know, in the virtual space there. And I will say that, you know, I am not a person who is phobic of spiders. I have probably about the average response to a spider. I don't want to be near one. But also, it doesn't stop me from, you know, having a good day if I see one. And also, I don't, like, love the things. But, like, the spider content in this is some of the most upsetting spider content that I have seen, to the point where, like, it ends with these tarantulas crawling all over you. That's the way it ends, crawling over you enough that it blacks out the sun, or it blacks out all of the light around you, and it transitions you back to the kind of the hub area. You fight like a gigantic building sized spider that is chasing you down the entire roller coaster. Just like, you know, if you don't shoot a spider before it gets up to your car, it will, like, start roosting on your HUD. Like, you know, you can look down and you can see, like, the front of the inside of the roller coaster. And that's where you see your score and your ammo count and, like, what weapons you have and things. And they, like, crawl up there and they're waiting there. And you have to shoot your HUD to get them to jump off. I will not lie. As, like, these, you know, spiders jumped at me and, like, you know, has, like, a face hugger kind of thing, I, by reflex, accidentally took the controllers and just, like, tried to shoot them off my face. So just in case you needed a sense of how I do in a panic situation, there you go.
So it sounds to me like we should amend.
You will never play that game. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, but David, you should never play this game.
Fair enough. But it sounds to me like amending your previous statement. You have the normal reaction to spiders that most people do, by which you mean wanting to shoot them.
Well, you don't really have hands in this game. You just have two guns that float. I couldn't exactly, like, gently pick it up with a magazine and carry it outside. Oh, man. But it's fun. Like, I don't know. It's been a very long time, you know, a couple of years, really, since I've played, like, an arcade light gun shooter. And this is, like, a really good use of VR, I think.
Yeah. So this is going to a little bit get to our multiplayer, but light gun shooters are maybe pound for pound one of my favorite video game genres.
They're fun.
And I hadn't really considered that VR would be a really good place for them. I could see it'd be interesting if that made a little bit of a comeback.
Yeah, no, I have not seen too many games that do this exact same thing, but there's, like, just a bunch of VR games that don't really get any press. So it might be out there.
Definitely.
But yeah, this is like it was real cool. I got it. Like, I was like, it was one of those games on PlayStation Plus. Like, I'm never going to use this. I don't have PlayStation VR. Then I got PlayStation VR and I was like, I don't know that I want to do this because it might be too scary. But it's good. It's a lot of fun.
Except for the spiders that would, you know,
I was having fun. Like, it didn't actually, like, it didn't ruin my day. It was just kind of like, oh, like, I video game spiders, like, the only ones that have ever really bugged me are the ones in Dark Souls 2. And that's because they're, like, extra chitinous and they look, like, waxy and, like, they're not really alive. Like a regular, you know, like a Skyrim big hairy cave spider doesn't really bother me that much. These ones did. Well, additionally, like, you are, like, going through a cavern tunnel or a cave tunnel, and there are cocooned bodies with screaming faces that belch venom at you hanging, and you have to, like, move your head like to not like run into them and take damage. So you're like kind of weaving around these things, and they will do really, really cheap stuff where they will make it so that you have to like lean forward or lean in one direction. They will do a jump scare right where it made you lean. So like you lean right into something that just, you know, screams in your face. It all sounds really cheap. It sounds really cheap, but it works. It works very well.
I will believe you.
Yeah. Any other questions about Until Dawn, Rush of Blood?
Nope.
Okay. Bonus round. Now to start with the bonus round. Jala, because this doesn't really fit into the grind and doesn't fit into the end boss. Why don't we hear about PAX South, which you attended this past weekend?
Yahoo! Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's been a couple years since the last time I went over to PAX, but I made it a point to do so this year because I'd kind of been remiss, you know, and I'd had a few listeners ask me, hey, when are you going to be going to PAX South again? You know, because they wanted to meet up and such. So, I went this year, and it's interesting because it was a little bit smaller than some of the prior years that I went. There were not any AAA companies. Like, Capcom has gone every single year, but they were not here this time. And it's basically probably because they just don't have a big thing right now that they can show at this particular juncture or something like that. But, you know, they were missing. So the big main thing that there was to play there was Secret Neighbor. And I did not get in the line for that because it's like, well, if I want to buy it, I'll just go buy it, you know, because that's kind of like my MO about a lot of long lines, you know, like I'd rather look around at all the smaller stuff. Yeah. And, you know, like unless I'm really absolutely chomping at the bit for the particular title, I'm not going to, you know, go and do that. But one of the listeners, Candace, she did go through and did play it in The Secret Neighbor and did like it. That is kind that of like a survival.
Creepy as hell.
Yeah, it's a survival horror kind of thing. So, I mean, it's something that I would be interested in looking at, but I just was not going to sit in the line for it when there was other stuff to do. So
is that related to Hello Neighbor?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah. I think this is like a sequel or something. So,
Yeah, it's the same kind of thing. Multiplayer version.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. So, anyway, that being the case, that was like the major title. I skipped that out, but there was a big showcase by Annapurna Games. Mm-hmm. So that was cool. And then, of course, the usual assortment of indie developers and stuff. Tabletop was about the same size as it was previously. I actually did not go over there and fiddle with any of that stuff, although listener Devin was over there along with Candace for a large portion of it, and they really liked some of the indie games. So, it's kind of good that Ben's not on because he would be sad that I did not go look at the tabletop stuff, you know, the board games and such. But one thing that they had this year that I wanted to do that I hadn't been able to do previously was there was a live action dungeon game. There were three different layouts and you could go through this live physical dungeon with actors and the whole nine. And I was interested in doing it, but it was like $70 to go in and do it. Okay. That's Whoa, not,
that's really like,
that's,
expensive.
That's a lot of money, but like, it's a lot of money, but they also sold, it looked like they were selling like power-ups and stuff. Like it's a mobile game, like here, pay this money to get these tokens, to get these things like loot boxes style. And I was like, I am not. Because I didn't want to spend like $1,000 buying some ridiculous amounts of whatever, which I don't know if it would be that much, but you know what I'm saying. I wasn't gonna. So I skipped that, but that's what took up a large portion of what used to be the entire expo space. Uh-huh. And they moved some things around from the last time that I went, but everything was still there. It was just in different places, different parts of the convention center. It looked like they were doing some remodeling. So that might have also had to do with, you know, why the space had shifted some. Mm-hmm. As for vendors and things, I actually snagged a really cool piece of wall art. It was a Symphony of the Night shadow box of Dracula's very famous line, "What is a man? A miserable little pile of secrets." And so I've got that. They sold out because it was very popular. That particular booth was really popular. Mm-hmm. But they're mailing me one in like a couple of weeks. The website is artovision3d.com.
Exactly, I also have a link. Exactly the same people who sold me my Maniac Mansion. Awesome. Yeah, my Maniac Mansion. Awesome. And did they have those kind of cool acrylic resin miniature ones?
Little,
That's what I have the Chrono Trigger one in.
Cool. So what he's talking about is the little desk size ones are a little acrylic shadow box things that are about the size of a postcard or thereabouts.
Yeah, about
size
like a CD.
A CD. Okay, but about like that. And then the other shadow boxes are kind of like, 8x10 or something, maybe a little bit larger, 9x12, something like that.
Yeah, like wall hanging.
Wall hanging with a little frame on it and everything. And the interesting thing about these shadow boxes is, although on the website they seem to take pictures just fine, when Cole and I tried to take pictures of ours, it fails miserably.
They're really, really flat.
Yeah, it looks flat and it's like, no, it's actually really cool, but you can't see how cool it is unless you actually have it in front of you. So, mm-hmm. Or go to their website because they somehow did it. They somehow took pictures. But the one that I have coming to me of Dracula's line, that is not currently represented on their website, but you mm-hmm. might, if somebody is really interested in that and goes to my Twitter, sees it and, you know, is like, okay, I need that for my life. You can probably message them and they can give you one, mm-hmm. or whatever. So, there were also a couple of really cool panels that I attended. So I will talk about panels next. And then at last I will discuss the video games.
Okay.
So, the panels, you will be happy to know, Cole, that they were both horror game related.
Cool. So,
the first one was Friday night. It was Press X to Scream, Horror Storytelling in Video Games. Cool. And they covered Code Vein, Luigi's Mansion, and Majora's Mask, and the different forms of horror narrative in each, and why these are good representations of different types of horror. And I'm pretty sure that they picked these because most people don't think of these in those terms so much. I mean, Code Vein's got vampires, but I mean, how does Dennis talk about it? He's like playing dress-up dolls with vampires.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, waifu titties. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's how that gets talked about. And Luigi's Mansion, of course, is like on the cutesy end of the scale. And then mm-hmm. Majora's Mask is, I mean, okay, maybe, but like it's not like you're not talking Silent Hill or Resident Evil in this. Yeah. You're talking about other forms of horror narrative and how the storytelling of these, you know, like it works as a horror narrative and the deeper, you know, reasons why these are unsettling games to play mm-hmm. as you go through them. So I will say that listening to them talk about Code Vein made it sound a lot cooler than anything Dennis has ever said. So Dennis sucks at trying to make it sound cool, even if he really enjoys it. So anyway, and the thing is that listener Tim said the same thing when we got out of there. He's like, yeah, so this sounds a lot better from what they're saying than anything I've mm-hmm. heard anybody say about it. So,
yeah.
You know, so that was a thing. I don't really know. Like I've got screenshots of a lot of their presentation, which I will be uploading to Twitter in a little bit. So if somebody wants to see like what the bullet points are of all of that, I don't want to go into all the nitty gritty, mm-hmm. But I will have it up on my Twitter for anybody interested. You can just scroll through the media that I've uploaded and find it there.
Yeah, no, it's good that they uh-huh. picked like unconventional things. Like what else is there to say in front of a crowd about, you know, Resident Evil 2? You know.
Yeah, but you know, so I liked that element of it, the fact that they chose these atypical games to present this point. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was really neat, and I enjoyed it a bit. And so one thing that all of us thought after going to this panel was we turned and we looked at each other and said, so I guess this means that we need to make Cole play Luigi's Mansion or Majora's Mask on Hex Crank so, as a horror video game now uh-huh. because of this. You know, so anyway, there you go, Cole. There's some ideas for you. Okay. But anyway, moving along though. So that was the first panel, and there's not a whole lot more to say about that one in particular. Mm-hmm. The other panel that I went and, you know, went out of my way to go see was Residents of Evil, not Resident Evil, mm-hmm. 3 year celebration. It is a podcast that is about Resi and survival horror in general. And they are on YouTube. That is their primary place, but you can also get the audio only as well up, you know, if you just like pull it up on your podcast app. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they had Nick Apostolides there, who is the mocap and voice actor for Leon from the RE2 remake. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty neat. He was there as part of the panel and part of the Q&A session. They were kind of like presenting a little bit about, you know, their podcast and the kinds of things that they do on their show. But then they were also showcasing a game in the style of Resident Evil that they're making that is called Vigil. Mm-hmm. And people who are interested, I posted to the Level Facebook page and also to my Instagram the video, like a crappy here's me holding my cell phone video of the trailer, although you can also find it on YouTube, yep. For, you know, officially, and then also like photos and things of the panel, so you can take a look at those. But it's vigilgame.com is where you can go to see the trailer and see some of the information about that. They also have an alpha demo that is out. So that is something that definitely should be worked into Hex Crank. Like if you finish Alone in the Dark, mm-hmm. a little bit early, then, you know, maybe try that out and, you know, drop that on Hex Crank, because that, yep. definitely, from what I've seen of it, it definitely looks like something that you will want to follow, mm-hmm. And that I will also be following, yeah. The development of as it goes. But the guys are wanting to develop this game and get it funded insofar as like paying the people who are working on it, that mm-hmm. are working with them, collaborating with them. But they want to release it for free.
Right.
Because this is a game that is being developed by the community for the community. And I thought that was really cool of them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a lot of work and it takes a lot of time, a lot of effort. So it's not something that's going to be dropping next year necessarily. It might take a couple of years depending upon funding and project work. But,
yeah.
you know, like that's how it is whenever, you know, you've got a passion project that you're working on, you know. Mm-hmm. But hopefully with enough of hands and enough support, they can make that thing a go. But definitely also Nick, the voice actor for Leon, is also a voice in the Vigil game as well.
Cool.
So I
had no idea this was a thing until you mentioned it in I saw your post about it. I thought it was something, yeah. different that I knew about, and so I didn't look any closer. But no, I didn't know about it until you mentioned in the green room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I definitely wanted to bring it up to you because, you know, as everybody already knows, like we cover as a network, we talk about survival horror all the time.
Quite a bit, yeah.
And you know, of course we have the dedicated Hex Crank where I'm kind of not part of it. I'm part of the community that's hanging out, chilling, mm-hmm. and watching you play, except for every once in a while when there's a multiplayer game, mm-hmm. you know. But still, like it's a thing of interest that we needed to discuss, so I wanted to bring that up. And for anybody who's like a particular Resident Evil fan, check out Residents of Evil. Mm-hmm. And you know, give them a listen and check it out.
Yeah.
So definitely. So those are the two panels that I went to. There were tons more panels, but you know, I was very busy wandering around and hanging out with, you know, listeners and such. Mm-hmm. So it was like I'll catch a couple of them. I'll catch the ones that I'm like super excited about, and that's it.
Cool.
So that's the extent of my panels. As for games, this is another place where all of the survival horror stuff will shine.
Because that's what you sought out, yeah.
That is, I went and I looked around, mm-hmm. and of all the things that I looked around and saw, most of the ones that were super exciting to me that I hadn't already seen previously, mm-hmm. were survival horror games that were coming out or had come out, but I didn't know about them, or I had seen them and even wishlisted them, but I didn't, you know, no more than just like what the Steam page said, you know?
Right.
So there's three that I must get. One is World of Horror, which you were going to talk about anyway during the end boss. Mm-hmm. So World of Horror is a Junji Ito and Lovecraft-inspired roguelite RPG with turn-based combat and branching path decision-making. Mm-hmm. There are five playable characters, there are puzzles, and there is magic use, but it costs you sanity to use it. So,
pretty much pulled right out of the Call of Cthulhu tabletop.
Uh-huh. And it has like a black and white, stark black and white. They call it 1D art style. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's very much in the manga look, you know, looking kind of vain. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it looks really good. It's going to be dropping in February next month. So,
yes, I'll talk more about it
Yeah. Okay. Rock on. So that's all I'll say about that one. Mm-hmm. The next one that I will bring up that I also must get, this one is not a horror game.
Okay.
It's called Wildermyth. Wildermyth is currently in early access on Steam. If you go and you check on it, it has a 10 out of 10 rating. So from the time that I and Dave and Tim all played it, we all absolutely loved it. And we were just like, we are going to get this game, all of us.
Yeah,
it is a very character-driven, myth-making tactical RPG, turn-based tactical RPG with an art style that is similar kind of to like Daria, that kind of a thing.
It's like a pop-up book, almost like a 2.5D. Yeah, you're on a 3D grid, but the actual characters mm-hmm. and monsters are hand-drawn sprites. Yeah.
And they kind of look like you're picking them up and placing them, you know, grid by grid and things like that as it animates. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting in that way. And it also has like a lot of really funny story beats. I posted a bunch of photos of it. You can tell that the people who were developing this game are from like, you know, English as a second language kind of background, but it works to make it even more charming. The way that everything is presented and how things are worded is really charming. So I really like it, and I'm absolutely going to get it. And when you first start the game, you create three characters, and you can either randomize them and give them different attributes, like this person's a romantic scoundrel or something like that, or you can go and like individually create them. We just randomly rolled some stuff for the demo and, you know, went into the game, and then you can select how you want the character's narrative to play out. Like, you are rushing to go save your friend, but what is the reason behind this? Is it because you like, do you have a rivalry with this person? Mm-hmm. Is this a romantic love interest for you? And like, you get to pick that, and that changes the dynamics of how those characters interact with one another. And then also you get to pick your weapon. And of course, like, okay, so the guy goes in rushing to save his friend from the burning building, and you can have a pitchfork or a sword or a pan. What do you think I picked? Of course,
the pan.
And of course,
if you don't pick the pan, you're a cop.
Yeah, right. And then it's like, you know, at another point, I had a mage. That mage had a magical wooden spoon, because why would I pick a staff if there was a spoon option? So, you know, anyway, like, I had quite a bit of fun with this game, and we sat there and played through for a while, and we, you know, one of us played and then the other one took over and then another one took over, and we were just doing different stuff and teaching each other about the game as well. This one would definitely be something that would be really fun to stream as well. Uh-huh. Because of just like the branching paths and just the really charming narrative and everything like that. I think this would be something that a lot of people would have a fun time kind of hanging out and just commenting on, you know? Mm-hmm. So
nice.
And yeah, so that's Wildermyth. And that one is, like I said, currently in early access on Steam. So it is available, you know, right now, and I will be picking it up. I have not had a chance yet, but I will be before this podcast comes out.
How intricate is the turn-based kind of play? Is it you know, like less intricate than Final Fantasy Tactics? Is it like really crunchy like an XCOM? Like what are we dealing with here?
From the tidbit that I've played, you can manipulate objects in the world. You can, you have to open doors and things like that and move different amounts of spaces and things like that. Your mage character can ensorcel different, I forget what the word is that they use for it, but they have a word for charging different objects with magic and then manipulating them to attack enemies and things like that. It seems like there are some environmental factors, but I didn't get to play far enough into it to get like a super strong feeling for all of the technical aspects of the game so far. But you do have a wide variety of options insofar as what you can do with any given object or creature. So I look forward to playing with it a little bit more. And after I've got the early access version and I play a little bit, which will probably be before the next time I'm on the show, I will come back and report back about that. So you can put a pin, I guess, in that one.
Cool.
Yeah. So the next must get item is Haunted Halloween 86, The Curse of Possum Hollow. So,
okay.
I posted a video. I dropped a link in there. I also posted this to my Instagram and my Twitter. This is made by Retrotainment Games, which is a company that makes games programmed, like currently programmed, but programmed onto NES cartridges that you can actually play in your physical NES
computers. These guys are always at PRGE.
Yeah. Yep. And so this one is a sequel to their first game, which was the Haunted Halloween 85. Mm-hmm. This is a side-scrolling platforming horror-themed beat-em-up. And it's currently on Switch, Steam, NES, Famicom, and Xbox One. Mm-hmm. So that's a bunch of different things. Yes. they are currently working on a new game that is called Full Quiet, which is an open world platforming NES game. With like a kind of creepy horror feeling to it.
I hear that. Anyway, and I think Goonies 2, like a Goonies 2 alike. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, this game seems to have some pretty fun mechanics and everything. I definitely am going to be picking this up on my Switch because why would I play it on anything but a Switch? But anyway,
that's only civilized.
So yeah. Right. But I mean, like the beat 'em up mechanics are pretty cool. You like for the zombies and stuff, you have to aim for the head, and things like that. So it has a little bit more precision to it. And there's like a broader move set than something that you would find on a typical NES game from, like back in the day. So even though it has the aesthetic and it even is programmed for an NES, so you can use it on an NES, it's actually a little bit more complex. So it's really neat. So I'm looking forward to playing that. So those are my top three. Mm-hmm. But I still have some other ones to bring up. There is a game that I'm sad that Dennis is not going to hear about because he's not here this time. It's called Creature in the Well. It is basically pinball with swords.
He's spoken about this game, before. He is he brought it as like either a brief or an end boss as like, oh, this looks really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pinball hack and slash top down dungeon crawler, and it's actually out now. So, like, if you guys remember and talk to him before I do, tell him he can go buy it now.
Cool.
It's
also on Game Pass.
It's also on what, David?
Game Pass.
Okay.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. No,
that one is out, but I happen to see it at.
I will convey that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the next one that I've got to talk about is Bring to Light, which we talked about before on a brief. I think I probably brought it. This is an atmospheric survival horror game where you use light to solve puzzles while you're trying to navigate out of a series of subway tunnels that are infested with creatures after your train crashes. And this is one that is VR and regular controller. But the reason why I remember this is because it also uses biometrics via heart rate and such
to change
the experience.
Yeah. Okay.
And yeah, it's out right now, so I could actually pick it up and use it, pick it up and play it. But it looked really neat when I was in packs, you know, taking a look at it. Basically, if you do not have a heart rate monitor to have that feedback for the video game, they basically just kind of aggregate from the data that they have from other people who have played and use that to change the experience at different points.
Gotcha.
From like their past history of data from people who have actually had a heart rate monitor on. Mm-hmm. So it is not necessarily like, oh, it's bad if you don't have the full experience. No, you actually can.
It's got like an average experience as opposed to one that's customized.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly. So, but yeah, that one is out, and that one was one that was already on my wish list. So mm-hmm. now it's like, oh yeah, it's out, it's available, and I can play that. And also, I have a little bit more context for it, having seen it. You know, and they also have a lot of sound design elements that definitely this is something that you want to play with headphones. If you are playing with a controller, in particular, you want to have the headphones on to get at least that kind of, I guess, more realistic experience, you know, like yeah. with the locations and things of where the sounds are coming from. So
I'm watching a video of it on Steam, and like just they have you walking down a hallway and the walls are closing in on you, and they're like uh-huh. like twisting and turning. That seems like too much.
yeah. So I remember I don't know when I had talked about it. I think probably before it came out, because it's been a minute.
It's been years ago. I was at the old studio.
Yeah. It's been a minute since I talked about this, but I do remember it. And now I know why I was, you know, putting a pin in it and why I brought it. So,
nice.
Okay. And, another one is, I only have just like very little bit to say, Ashen, which is from Annapurna. So open world co-op, kind of, but like you only see them every once in a while, passive multiplayer kind of game, mm-hmm. RPG with a Souls style stamina based combat system. And that's basically all I'm going to say about that one, but that one looks interesting. I do not know much about it, honestly.
Continue. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, it's kind of like more mission based. They're like, it is a Dark Souls style game. If there were quest givers, as opposed to, mm-hmm. Things that you needed to just kind of hope you randomly run into. It's one that's on, it's on our radar for Bonfireside Chat. Like, I think mm-hmm. it's even going to be on the upcoming poll that we do for what we cover after cool. Kingsfield. So yeah, it's absolutely mm-hmm. like it is there and waiting for us. Let's say.
Is this the one that took like 10 years to develop or something?
I don't believe so. Maybe.
What's the Souls like that's just been in development hell?
Don't know.
Mm-hmm. Do not know. Sorry. Yep. I have no answers.
No answers.
To the Googles. Anyway, I've only got a couple more and then I promise I'm done.
Okay.
So, the next one is another horror game. It's called Infliction, but they have an extended cut coming out. It's one that's been out for a couple of years now, but they've got a newer version of it coming out. It's mm-hmm. a psychological horror game where there is an AI enemy that is stalking you while you are inside of a suburban house where the family is not there. They're missing.
Right.
And it's story-driven as you're learning the family's history of, you know, their domestic tragedies while you're hiding or trying to find ways to combat the supernatural enemy that's coming after you. And it's something that, like I said, it's available now, but they've got an extended cut or something that's coming out, mm-hmm. Pretty soon. And, it sounds to me like the horror version of Gone Home.
Yeah. I was going to make that comparison. It also it looks kind of similar to a game I did a Hex Crank first hour of called Visage.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's another one that is kind of on my radar, although it's not like in my top three. It's something that I'm going to probably, put a pin in and check on. Yeah. And then the last game that I will mention is a game called Greek Memories of Azure. And Greek is not Greek like the, language. It is G-R-E-A-K. And
like Gleek, but with an R.
Greek.
Yes. So it's a one-player side-scrolling adventure title where you can toggle control between three different characters, kind of like how you can in Trine. And basically, the only couple of things I'm going to say, it has really charming artwork. It looks like something that's up my alley that is similar to other things that I like. You can also sign up on playgreek.com. to get a copy of the demo when it's released pretty soon. So I've already signed up to get a copy of the demo whenever that drops. Although they did have the demo there at the convention, so they might have already dropped it and just not updated their website quite yet. But either way, it looks fun, and I want to take a look at it and play it and such. So Those are the main things that I went and took time to go see. I mean, I popped in for a little bit of the Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes tourney. And, I poked in for just a second to the Mario Brothers 2 and 3 speedruns. But other than that, mostly out of bitterness from my, experiences and frustrations with the Switch.
Yeah.
Yes. So there's that. But otherwise, that's basically my experience of PAX South, was mostly poking around some of these little indie titles and, chit-chatting with some folks.
Very cool. What listeners did you meet up with?
With Candace and Devin and Dave and Tim.
Nice.
So much fun. And there were a couple of others that I was hoping to catch on my way back, because I made a quick detour over in Austin, but the timing didn't work out to meet up with Carlo or with Dominique. So that'll have to be a different trip another day.
Nice. Cool. Well, thank you for sharing your impressions from the show floor.
Which much of my impressions are all spooky.
I'm not going to complain.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. This is a question that I put up this time, kind of inspired by my reading about Atari for an upcoming WAF episode. But I have asked, so I said, you can have one arcade game in your home. Assume you magically have enough room for it and that you never have to worry about moving it. What arcade cabinet do you choose? Now, there are some variances that I could have put in here, but I wanted to see who tried to rules lawyer me. So I haven't looked at the responses yet. Anybody who says, oh, I want a MAME cabinet, or, anybody who says I want a MAME cabinet, they get banned from the page. And anybody who says a pinball machine gets promoted to admin.
What if they say skee ball?
I say arcade cabinet. I don't know that I would call. Okay, you got me. I distinguish arcade games.
Is it a sandwich?
Yeah, it basically comes down to that. I distinguish arcade cabinets from ticket machines. But because I read the question there, Jala, what does Chris say?
Chris says, I'd probably go with either Joust or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. There are a lot of others I could add to the list, but I somehow narrowed it down to just two. I played both of those a ton as a kid.
Man, it would be amazing to have a Joust cocktail table.
I didn't even realize Joust was an arcade game.
Oh, yeah. No,
I thought that was just on the Atari.
Yep. No, they had different versions of it. Yeah. No, I like there'd be no way I could accept it if I won it. But the first Portland Retro Games Expo that I went to, I put $5 into a raffle to win a Joust cocktail cabinet. Didn't win it, but I got to sit down and play a lot of Joust at that cocktail cabinet. So.
And now you have that idea in your head that is.
Okay. Yeah. This is just completely random, but I think Joust is maybe going to be my new video game I want to see get a movie adaptation.
You just want to see a bunch of ostriches die is the thing.
That's terrible.
Yeah, I'm imagining Ursula Le Guin, or however her name's pronounced. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm imagining just that with ostriches.
Oh, man. David, what does Greg say?
Greg says, no brainer for me, because I want to buy this at some point this year once there's a price drop. the Star Wars cabinet that Arcade 1UP put out last year. I love Atari Star Wars. It's one of my favorite arcade games of all time, and impossible to play while in emulation due to the unique control scheme with the yoke.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually 3 Star Wars games included, and the others are good. It's just Atari Star Wars that I really have fond memories of. Can't just justify paying $500 for it, though.
Mm-hmm.
Damn Disney charge and Iron Man leg for the license.
Mm. I'm curious if that's the raster or the vector version.
So, I remember playing in an arcade ostensibly Star Wars game that was just super, super abstract and trippy.
Just made up of a bunch of green lines?
Like, yeah,
you were doing like the Death Star surface and Drench Run?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's the one Greg's talking about. Or one of them,
okay.
Anyway.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. No, yeah, they had great. One of these at a... It's abandoned now, and basically would be a good place to do some urban exploration. But out by Mohican State Park, there was a like water slide place that we used to go to every summer with my dad. And the water slides, very cool. But the small arcade that they had inside, they had a sit-down Star Wars cabinet. And I loved playing that. Also, nice. Root beer tapper, but with like the actual beer tap controller. Basically, what I'm saying is I pine for my childhood and everything I want I can never get back.
Yep.
let's see here. I don't actually believe that. That's not how I actually feel. It's just funny to say things that are depressing. Dan says, Street Fighter 2 always has memories for me. Being taken to a working men's club whilst the adults drank whiskeys and gin, me and my friend would get lots of change and take turns on Street Fighter. Ken for the win.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah. Go listen to the adaptation to Kay about the Street Fighter movie.
Yeah. That's a thing.
Yeah.
That does have what's his name? Bison's monologue is quite possibly one of the greatest monologues in any movie.
I mean just like yes, but unironically, it's actually really good.
I mean that honestly. Yeah. Like it legitimately and despite everything else in the movie, that scene is amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's very good. Yeah, I was surprised.
It's such a bonkers movie.
I was surprised I didn't see more Street Fighter 2 in this. That is also an answer that I would give in addition to my, you know, the one that I prepared for this. Jello, mm-hmm. What does Casey say?
Casey says, this was the first arcade machine I saw as a kid that I was obsessed with, even though the games weren't very good. And it is Sumo, multi-game, multi-motion system.
Oh, you sit in like a hamster ball.
It looks like a hamster ball.
Weird. I don't know.
That's pretty awesome.
No, this seems to be like designed to make an impression on a kid.
Yeah.
Although you can apparently play MechWarrior with it, which I feel like that sells it right there.
Right?
David, what does Rookie say?
Rookie says, back in the late 80s, early 90s, my friend used to take road trips down to Key Largo pretty regularly. And there was a bowling alley we'd occasionally go to that had Dragon's Lair 2 Time Warp. As a kid, it was a magical Disney cartoon where I was in charge and anything could happen. As an adult, I know that anything meant dying repeatedly because of bullshit timing and poor signaling. But it still hits mm-hmm. me right in the nostalgia bone. This thing was so awesome, it costs 4 quarters to play.
And still does. It's the only reason I haven't played it at Quarter World in Portland is because it's the most expensive machine in the yeah, it's the most expensive machine in the building.
Jeez.
Yeah. I was reading, and I don't know if this is just like a prototype or an early one or something like that, but apparently there's some version that actually has like physical slides or whatever it shows you for each scene.
I don't know about physical slides. I mean, they're laser disc. Basically they're like laser disc readers is what the machine is. And they're really costly to maintain. I may just be, I, unaware of what you're talking about.
Maybe this was like, I don't know, I'm gonna have to look that up in between the things and come back next show.
Let's see here. So Lindsay writes, Galaga. When I see it, I have to play it. Draws me in. Galaga would honestly be my first answer on this. So I will defer to another one later on. Galaga is a very good game. Yeah. Wee-wee. Jella, what does Jeff say?
Jeff says, the Star Wars trilogy machine. It was short and sweet, but difficult to master.
That was a good one. Yeah, no, you went through a bunch of iconic scenes from the original trilogy and like you fought Darth Vader by doing like QTEs with a joystick. Yeah. Let's see here. David, what does Tim say?
Tim says, I've got to go with Turtles in Time. I'm not even sure how much I'd play it. Just hearing the Pizza Power song on loop would be worth it. There are probably cheaper ways to accomplish that.
I mean, I laid this out in such a way that money was not an object.
This is true.
Yeah.
Also, hi, Tim. This is the Tim that I was just visiting with.
I assumed that it was this Tim. Frothy Ham.
Tim is amazing. Yeah. Yes, he is amazing. Hi, Tim.
Let's see here. Ollie writes, my favorite arcade game of all time, The New Zealand Story. Wow, that sounds so boring. Sorry. Sorry, I didn't mean to interject that. It just, wow, if you were trying to...
I didn't mean to, but also...
But also really I did. It sounds really boring. The history of barrel crafting. Jeez. Oh, wow. Okay. My favorite arcade game of all time, The New Zealand Story. It's a wonderful little puzzle platformer. Although, when in America, I almost bought the Outrun cabinet pictured. I just found the shipping too expensive. Let me see here. Oh, yes. Yeah, he posted another one here. Oh, that's a good looking Outrun cabinet. I'll stick to playing it in Yakuza.
We're not going to discuss the New Zealand story because like that there's a photo, but it's just so boring.
See, first you insult Ireland, then New Zealand.
I'm slowly making enemies of the whole world. I'm sure that game is fun. I've never heard of it. It's just the title game is not on point. Let's see here, Jolly. What does Kian say?
He says, asteroids, beautiful high contrast visuals, simple controls, fun movement, intense moments caused by your own hubris.
Well, of course. Yeah. Anything with a vector screen is really tempting. Like, I don't think Battlezone is a fun game, but it is fucking gorgeous is the thing. Yeah. Asteroids is a good answer. And then round us out, David, what does Alexander say?
Alexander says, Joust. That game never gets old for me. Honestly, Balloon Fight on the NES is better, but still it's a satisfying arcade classic. Mm-hmm. Feathering the flap button is eternally satisfying to me for some reason.
It is. Why do you think Flappy Bird was such a success? It was just another version of that. Yeah. Let's see here. So for my answer, thank you everybody for responding. My answer would be Arkanoid.
Awesome.
Yeah. There's something about the way that that little paddle, little turn dial feels. Love that game. Lots of good memories of that as a kid. Runner up would be Marble Madness for the arcade. Cool. I love Marble Madness so much that I have Marble Madness art up on my walls in my living room.
Neat.
Yeah. How about you, Joe?
I have a few answers. The first one I would have to say, because it's obligatory, because it's like one of my favorite games ever, is Bubble Bobble.
Of course.
I have to have Bubble Bobble with somebody. So it has to be the arcade cabinet with that, because the cute artwork, I need it for my life.
Yeah.
And then also just have that theme going in the, oh, yes. All right. Anyway, Capcom versus SNK 2, because that is my favorite fighting game. I would need that.
Of course.
Or the Star Wars Pod Racer, because that's a lot of fun too.
That's a really fun game.
Specifically that, with the controls and everything, you need those controls. It's not fun using a controller in your hand. You need to have the arcade machine.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think I am? Some kind of monster?
Yes, I do, okay, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. See, look at you. Yeah, you're being monstrous right now.
I forget if that was on the air. I made a sound that upset Jala, so I'm just going to keep on making it. Anything
it's
else,
very
Jala?
Upsetting. No, monster. You may move on now.
How about you, David?
Oh, man, this is the tough one. Like I mentioned earlier, I'm a huge fan of light gun games, mm-hmm. in particular the House of the Dead series. But I'm not sure if any of them have the longevity to, that would really make it be one of my choices. Mm-hmm. I also, as a shout out, really like Ocean Hunter is a lot of fun.
Oh, that game is fun. That's a Sega game, isn't it?
I'm not sure who made it, actually. But, I have fond memories of that, which may have resulted in my subsequent phobia of sharks and other deep-sea spookums.
It is a Sega game. I don't see a picture of the, at least on the Wikipedia. That was, like, a sit-down one, right? Like, you sat in, like, a Jurassic Park arcade game, kind of, like, dark room kind of thing. And you had, like, a harpoon gun?
Yeah, so I think there were a couple of different form factors for it, but you have sort of like a two-handed controller thing.
Yeah, it's like you're using like a little scuba motor, but it shoots your harpoons out. Yeah,
right, exactly.
Yeah.
Although I think the one I'd probably go with would be Gauntlet Legends or maybe Dark Legacy.
Those are good games.
Yeah.
But if you had it at home, then the functionality where you had an N64 memory pack wouldn't necessarily work that well, would it?
No.
Okay. I don't mean to question, but those are fun games. I remember having a lot of good time with those.
Yeah,
I don't mean to question, but let me just go ahead and question it.
Well, no, I did.
You are such a monster.
Yeah, no,
first
no.
First you tell Ollie that his game is boring. And you make offensive noises, and now you're questioning David's authority about his own opinions.
No. So,
you are such a monster. What happened?
I'm not fit for society anymore. No. So when I say I don't mean to, I guess what I mean is I don't want to feel bad for. Oh, well. Ocean Hunter and Gauntlet. Very good. Cool. So thank you, everybody, for writing in. If you would like to participate in the multiplayer going forward, that can be found at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Those prompts go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where because of a lack of planning on my part or poor planning on my part, a thing that I – so basically I am the only person who came with a story. And also it is a story that Jala mentioned earlier on. But I'm so excited about it. And maybe we can talk about it for like a second. So World of Horror is a game that I streamed a while back. It was announced a long time ago, and it's kind of always been on my radar to a certain extent because it hits a lot of my buttons. Let's say Junji Ito, roguelike kind of structure, kind of deal. I was very excited to find out that it has a release date, at least for Steam Early Access. So it's going to be coming out on February the 20th. And the early access scheme is that it is going to come with a couple of stories, basically like a couple of modules, and then they're going to add more modules as the game kind of goes through development, which is pretty much exactly how I want to play one of these. I was super impressed when I did the stream because like it really was like playing a D&D module, like a one-shotter of a really cool, a very cool, well-designed Junji Ito kind of story with fun tactical combat, with a fun tactical combat system and incredibly horrifying art and concepts.
Yes.
Yeah. Not a lot of games that I'm like high key looking forward to. Like, yeah, Cyberpunk's going to be good, et cetera, et cetera. Like, this is the game that I am horniest for this year. So I'm happy that it's coming out very soon.
Yeah. Then how are you going to be horny for the rest of the year?
I'm going to save all my horny for 2021 after Bernie gets elected.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Good, solid plan.
So what were you gonna say, David?
No, just
you broke that, David.
that sounds really really fun. I'm going to definitely have to look into that.
Yeah. Something that doesn't come through in the still images that you see is that the animation is on point.
Really?
It's very few frames, but like, because so much of it is Junji Ito body horror kind of stuff, the enemy animation, especially like large large boss enemies that you fight that are like right up in your face, the stuff that they do to really sell the movement is very, very additive, let's say. And the music is good too. The music, it feels very similar to like the the music from the Mac Venture games on the NES. So like Shadowgate or Uninvited. Again, I'm hitting all of these things. This looks and plays a little bit like a Mac Venture game.
Nice. Yeah. I also actually didn't really know that Junji Ito was a thing.
Oh, buddy.
I'm going to have to look into some of his stuff. The only stuff he's done that I'd heard at all about is Uzumaki.
Uzumaki is definitely the best thing that he's done. His short, like the compilations of short horror comics that he's done are a bit hit or miss. But but Uzumaki is a must read.
Nice. I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah. I recommend it without reservation. Cool. So February the 20th. Jala, do you have any stray observations or thought about this before we move on from the segment?
No. The things that you have said are sound judgments, despite the fact that you are a monster.
Yeah, no.
Who is no longer fit for any sort of society.
Nope. Drive me underground. Oh, man. Show up at my door with torches. How do you feel about buttoning it up?
I feel like buttons.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level, episode number 313. The last of the palindromes we're going to get until 323, and then we're going to get one every 10 episodes or so until we get to the fours. Anyway, that's how math works. Hi, thank you so much for listening. I'm trying to think of things that you can do. I guess what I would say is oftentimes we make offhanded mentions of the way that the shows on the network are funded. For the new year, I actually made some landing pages. So if you want to go to $5buckducks.com or $10buckducks.com, you can see a whole menu of all of the content that you get when you back Patreon, kind of at those particular levels, spoiler, at either $5 or $10. It's a bunch of stuff when you see it all put together. So if you've been on the fence, we appreciate all of the backing that that we get, and we try and give plenty of return. So $5buckducks.com or $10buckducks.com. And that's really the only promo that I have. Leave ratings or reviews if you can, and for sure, come back next week.
So talking about your ducks, it reminds me of this thing that occurred this weekend. So There was somebody with a shirt that had a chicken, and the chicken had a wig on. And it said Bach, B-A-C-H, as in the composer.
Okay.
And I saw this and I was like, heh, I like that shirt. It's a stupid dad joke, but it's mildly entertaining to me because it has a chicken on it, which is a bird. And I like birds.
Yes.
But then David turned and looked at it, and I had not said anything about what type of bird. And he was just like, oh, you mean that duck over there? How would you think that's a duck? So anyway, my brain broke. So buck sounds like buck. You know,
chickens. Anyway. Oh, you mean dry ducks? You mean the dry pointy ducks?
Yes, the dry pointy ducks. So
that's really good. I like that quite a bit. But I know exactly where that kind of like error comes from. You know, it's like when I talk about mowing the yard as vacuuming the lawn.
Well, he also referred to the escalator as the remote stairs. So that was the thing. But to his credit, it was like a cartoony, you know, looking thing. So, I mean, like if you just kind of glance over it and you're not like looking at it, you know, like the reason why I could tell that it was a chicken was because it said buck, not because it looks particularly chicken-esque, you know?
Yeah.
So in his defense.
No, it's fine. I'm not going to come down hard on somebody for like, I don't know. Conventions take a lot out of you.
That is the guy's thing. All right. But like everybody else, you can just be a monster and just like make those nasty little noises and okay.
No.
All right, let's go. Come on. Let's finish this podcast.
Thank you everybody for listening. We really appreciate you. I'm Cole Ross. You can find my streams. Watch my streams on Friday and Saturday nights at twitch.tv/duckfeedtv.
I'm David Mysmith. You can't find me because I'm a ninja.
This is true. And also, I am Jellichon in all the places. You can find me there.
Can't find what doesn't want to be found. Thank you so much, everybody, and stick around for some titles. Okay, who's got titles?
I got some.
Okay.
It's funny to say things that are depressing.
It's funny to say depressing things.
Sure.
Okay.
The history of barrel crafting.
Sorry. I forgot that I said that.
You are such a monster.
Okay.
It's because it's true. You could even put that in parentheses and make it a really long title. Okay. Anyway, The Last of the Palindromes.
Okay.
Try Pointy Ducks. I know it's very late in the game, but that's also an entry.
Try Pointy Ducks. Gotcha. David, what you got?
All right. In terms of repeats, I had You Are a Monster.
Okay.
And The Dry Pointy Duck. I also have If You Don't Pick the Pan, You're a Cop.
Okay.
And then just mainly to troll you, I have Waifu Titties.
Titties spelled with two D's?
Yes.
Well, of course, double D's, yes. Waifu. Yep. Jesus, fuck. I need to take a shower.
You're all that horny for that game.
Yeah, but after 20 dries after February 20 dries a bone.
Those pointy ducks.
Like of the ones that are repeats, Dry Pointy Ducks makes me laugh the most.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do that one. No objections?
Nope. That's okay. Funny as hell.
Cool. All right, well, I'm going to go.
Me too.
Cool. Have a good night, you guys.
I'm not going to sit here on Skype and just... Guys?
Yeah? Guys? What? What? Okay. No. Okay, I was being casual. All right, I'm here. What?
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. See you, dude. See you, Jella.